So welcome to this session. My name's Cliff Kilgore. I'm a consultant practitioner working with older people in the Dorset area. And this is a study that involved cross-working really between Dorset University NHS Trust and Bournemouth University. And my colleagues, Dr. Pippa Collins and Mary Edwards, and alongside my colleague here, Michelle Board.
So hello everyone, my name is Michelle Board and I'm a Principal Academic in Nursing Older People at Bournemouth University, and I was delighted when Cliff invited us to be part of this HEE funded project, and with my colleagues Janet Scammell, Dawn Morley and Kelsey have been working with Cliff on this important area of practice.
It was really interesting what we did here, because actually I'd started to sort of hear anecdotal comments really from colleagues around the country of advanced clinical practitioners, particularly about the role of the advanced clinical practitioner. And originally I had this idea of writing an article about advanced clinical practice during the COVID period. And actually just a tweet that I put out seemed to attract a huge amount of interest, and pretty much from Health Education England as well. And actually it was that discussion that came from that response from that tweet from Health Education England and the agreement of £20,000 funding for this project that has taken us forward to the point that we're in now. So if we move on to the background, where it's always worth, I think, when we talk about advanced clinical practice, to talk about the definition of what we mean, particularly in England. So the definition, I'm going to read it to you, some of you will be very aware of this, is the advanced clinical practice is delivered by experienced registered health and care practitioners. It is a level of a practice characterized by a high degree of autonomy and complex decision-making, underpinned by master's level award or equivalent. And I think this sort of advanced clinical practice is really quite specific to England and probably the UK in general. But actually understanding the history of advanced clinical practice in the UK is really important, because actually it's not grown out of anything that's seen as under registration. Our colleagues in North America and Australia saw advanced clinical practice as nurse practitioners develop in the 60s, and they moved to registration of this profession quite quickly. But actually what we've done in the UK is it's evolved into lots of different particular specialties. And actually only in the last 5 years has there been a real move to draw what we understand today as advanced clinical practice together. And actually that has been really driven by Health Education England's involvement in England and has moved us forward to this point we're in now. So bringing us on to this study, that was really important, because actually understanding this background enables us to think about what would the aims and objectives be for taking this forward. So considering these on this next slide, the aim was really to investigate how the roles of the advanced clinical practitioner working with older people have adapted in response to the COVID-19 pandemic and explore the implications of future clinical practice. And actually that's really key to this, because what we recognized was an adaption of working. And one of the things that we'll pick up a little later, Michelle's going to talk about, is actually that adaptability of the clinical practitioner. We often forget that these aren't clinicians who've just suddenly turned out of university, but they're experienced AHP and nurses who've developed lots and lots of skills and consultation ability over a wide career pathway, and actually have come into advanced clinical practice after lots and lots of other experience. So actually, when we consider the objectives of this study, that's really, really important. So it was to complete a scoping review of the ACP response to emergency situations, which was important, to conduct a mix of focus groups and semi-structured interviews with ACPs, very much exploring that day-to-day practice with COVID in the background, and to collate those findings and present in a report that actually helps us to understand this and include sort of exemplars as well, because that's really brings it to life really. And obviously we want to make recommendations for future practice and development of advanced clinical practitioners. And then obviously always really important in any study is actually how we disseminate those findings. We want to do that through Health Education England and other practice forums, and through literature production as well.
Thank you, Cliff. And if I can just take on now, and just to give you a brief overview of where we're at, the scoping review is almost complete, and we're getting ready to submit that in a short while. And it was building on what Cliff has said around this interpretation of language with regards to ACP and how it's defined. And there was limited literature, actually, and inconsistency of how ACPs are defined. And it's only in the UK that this incorporates a multi-professional group. And I think, you know, in my opinion, we're leading the way in this. And our research has certainly reinforced that and the skill set of these skilled practitioners. So we're going to focus a little bit now on the data collection, though, that we did. We undertook three focus groups with about 23 participants during the autumn of last year. And then we undertook one-to-one interviews with individuals, 10 of those. And the profession of the participants were predominantly nurses, but we also had physios, OTs, paramedics. And they were based in a variety of acute hospital, and community settings in England. I'll just point this out. This is a HEE funded project. And so therefore, the research was undertaken in England, but from across the geographic area. The interviews and focus group were completed by both by us academics, who are all professionally qualified, I should add, but also our practice colleagues, Pippa and Mary. And we undertook a data analysis, and Envivo helped us with that data analysis. But we did that once Envivo had identified themes, we then discussed and agreed these. From the analysis of our focus groups and the interviews, these themes are emerging from the data. So the first theme relates to the first response to COVID by the public and older people themselves. We're going to focus on 2, 4, and 5, but I'll just go over a little bit with the other themes. So initially our participants were saying that they would get very frustrated with the public who didn't seem to appreciate the enormity of what was going on. Bearing in mind, this was during March to September last year, so before the second wave. And the participants were saying that they would get, if their family members go, no, it's all right, I want to carry on going about my work, but they would had left someone acutely unwell. And so for them as practitioners, seeing sometimes a laissez-faire response by the public in response to COVID was very frustrating. But they also became concerned about the older population, the older people, because what they noticed is they weren't accessing services or appointments in how they normally would have done. And other services were stopped. So some rehabilitation interventions had stopped. And so they were very worried about their this group of older population and the impact that isolation and not accessing healthcare professionals and services as they normally would have done would have on their conditioning during that time. As Cliff alluded to, there's this flexibility and adaptability, which I'll go into more detail shortly. The participants also talked about negotiating barriers in a rapidly changed environment, that they were having to keep up to date with what was going on a daily basis and implement those changes. And that was really challenging. And the speed of changes of what PPE should use, how you should use it, who you should be working with, and it caused a lot of frustration at times. But the ACPs were doing were leading the way in those environments. And this ties in with the personal attributes and qualities of ACPs and these experienced practitioners and what they offered. We also talked to them about the support that they were offered. So I'll go into a bit more detail about those. And they gave us several suggestions about developing future provision and lessons learnt. We'll only have time to go through the three, but you have to look out for our publications to find out more about those other themes. But we're happy to take questions after the session if we're permitted to do that. So theme two talked about flexibility and adaptability. And what was very clear from the data was how these advanced clinical practitioners were able to adapt to a variety of environments and roles in their organisations. They were often identified to say, can you go set up this service? Can you do this? Can you go and work here? And it would take on quite significant leadership roles and staff to manage. And they were, as I said, leading the way and responding to pressures within the NHS. One participant said there were all these new pathways within the department for people, for patients to go to, and how as a group they were very flexible and working in the different areas, and not all could cope with this. So the more experienced people had the knowledge base to do this. But one of the participants said they were redeployed to work in the A&E setting, and those less experienced said, actually, I can't be this responsive this quick and in responding to the complex needs of the client group coming in, whereas those that are more experienced were really able to adapt to this. And that ties into the use of technology. So they were talking about having to do telephone triage, but there was also video triaging that they needed to do. And so some of our participants were working in the care home setting, and they were having to not go into the homes because of the restrictions, but asking the care home staff to FaceTime and on their iPads, and then show them the patient if they needed to, or talk through with the care home staff how to take someone's blood pressure, and they drop off machines to enable them to do that. In their expertise, they took the leadership and reassured the care home staff that they didn't have to interpret their findings. That was the ACP's role. And they found that they had developed fantastic relationships and were very supportive of those working in residential settings. And we know that this was a neglected group during that first wave. Somebody said, and equally, if I think about our older adults as well, I need to see them. They said that it wasn't sufficient just to look at them through the iPad or do telephone triage. That holistic assessment that they needed to do, they need to actually sometimes lay my hand on them physically. And this struck me as this holistic approach that the ACPs had in the care of older people, particularly to listen to people and to pick up on all those nonverbal cues from the patient, the partner, and the family. So our ACPs demonstrated and talked about their advanced skills, their leadership's roles, enabling them to be flexible and adaptable during the first wave of this pandemic. And again, what struck us as we analysed the data is these personal attributes of the ACPs. Cliff mentioned that one of the definitions of an ACP is about being autonomous. And these really were autonomous practitioners. They said that their roles substantially changed, and they found themselves more clearly recognised for their personal attributes and their soft skills, as well as recognising their advanced clinical skills. And they said initially, you know, this occurred in an environment that was both stimulating, but also produced, you know, was quite they were quite anxiety provoking. But they felt that their previous skills maybe had perhaps been hidden, and not everyone, unless their immediate colleagues, but others didn't. So when they were asked to work in other environments and people didn't initially recognise these qualities, they then saw how advanced their skills were and how they were able to make decisions and assess and make decisions at quite a significantly senior level. So one of them is on an ACP program, said that she'd had a conversation with a program lead because she was questioning how I knew whether or not the decision I made was the right decision to make. But she said that she was at the highest level person making that decision. There weren't any physicians involved. There weren't any geriatricians involved, and the buck stopped with them. And we asked them, yeah, but did you feel you had did you feel you had enough knowledge? And they went, yes. We know our population. We know how to look after older people. We have that experience. And they put this down to the good training that they had. You know what your escalation parameters. They are often having to make decisions for one ACP talked about having to support an early discharge from hospital and that risk risk taking and that balance that had to be made. Another said about keeping somebody at home and that risk taking. Well, there's a lot of responsibility, isn't there, to be able to enable people to say, no, they don't need to go in. We can support this person at home. There's no call bell to say, actually, I'll grab someone to give me a hand. You're making a decision in someone's own home. But they felt they were able to cover for each other and sustain the services and have a good level of service. And they re-emphasize their autonomy, the ability to make decisions and be independent. And this knowledge and insight enabled them to perform at a strategic level, and their decisions and their opinions sought at this level. And people develop their confidence in them because of the knowledge that they demonstrated. We're very keen to find out about the support for ACPs. This was a very stressful time, as I know you all know. And some of them talked about, actually, they entered it like it was a sprint. And on reflection, when we were talking to them in October, November, they said, actually, this was a marathon. We should have taken our time with this. They felt quite exhausted going into that. It would be equally as interesting to do this data collection now, having done this after the first wave. Some felt invigorated by the opportunities and choice and the ability to shine as ACPs during this period, and others felt quite exhausted. And they said that, you know, and as they were heading into the second peak, they said, we'll be taking this more slowly now and to make sure that they won't be running out of the gate like they did before. And they said, we've gone through things together that we hadn't gone through before. So we had to learn how to swab together. We travelled around to try and get all the PPE sorted. We travelled around into care homes. We did it in pairs. And this collaboration with each other and we tackling it together was a real source of support for ACPs. And in some settings, this is more apparent in the acute hospital settings, the fact that they got lots of gifts given to them and that there were, you know, safe areas and breakout rooms, wobble rooms. I can't remember what they said they were for that support. Conversely, those in the community setting said, yeah, we didn't get too many cakes. There's no central place for them to be delivered, albeit that they were taking on significant roles in the community setting to avoid people having to go into hospital. Suffice to say, we were immensely inspired by what our ACPs were telling us, both in the interviews and the focus groups.
So obviously this brings us towards the end of our presentation, and we just really wanted to give you some take-home messages, really. Now, I can appreciate you will look at me and think, well, actually, he's biased because he's a consultant practitioner who's been through the role of advanced clinical practice, and therefore he's going to be biased in favour. But I think what this study has demonstrated is that the recognition of the role of advanced clinical practice, I think it's really strengthened that to us. As researchers, when we looked at the data and we spoke to these people, we had a real sense of incredible autonomy, but also of compassion and care for people, but working at incredible advanced level, making those autonomous decisions for the care of older people. But I think the other thing is recognising the standardisation of training and role specification. I think that's really important. When you look across the country at the variations of how people have got to advanced clinical practice, we've all understood that actually having some standardisation of practice, of training, would really help. It would help them, but it would also help everybody else. It would help all their other clinicians that they're working with to understand what this role really means. And actually, that's starting to come to fruition with the role of credentialing, which is something that Health Education England have been working on with other bodies to try and bring forward. And that's actually going to be a standardised way of understanding what advanced clinical practitioners are going to be delivering. But also, I think one of the real keys for us was the value of advanced clinical practitioners working with older people. What we found is, yes, they had all those skills. They were able to assess somebody, to examine them, to make a diagnosis and to start a treatment plan, to prescribe medication, all those things that we associate often with medical practice. But actually what we also saw was a really holistic approach. But actually all that learning that they gained from being nurses and AHPs in the past and how they develop their practice, and particularly around older people, enable them to be very, very central to the patient's needs and that true holistic view of what they wanted to do. So there was times when we recognized that they were seeing patients and making diagnoses, but actually offering choices that based what they did on what the patient wanted as well. And I think that's really, really important, came across quite strongly in the interviews that we had. And that balancing risk management versus personalized choices is absolutely key for that. So next steps, we've got a publication plan. Why wouldn't we? We have sort of further research. We want to really see whether we can gain some funding for how the Egypt impact on technology, and also to look at really what the patient's experience is around advanced clinical practice, because that's probably something that's underdeveloped at the moment. And I just want to leave you with a thought that actually in all the time that Michelle and I have tried to seek funding for projects in the past, who would have thought that sending out a tweet could get you £20,000? Thank you very much. How long did that take us?